Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Victory Over Self Radio. Victory Over Self, diving into all things athletics. Now, as things normally go, one day Blair Bennett sends me an Instagram post, hey, check this guy out. Checking the guy out, and wow, okay, this is some pretty legit stuff. I love it. A couple days, maybe weeks later, almost simultaneously, all of us text each other at once. Blair, Ross, and I say, holy, this guy is at Homewood Flossmoor with Corfist and Rob Assis. Then the legitness went up even more. So after that, heard Coach Volga here on a couple podcasts and just a ton of questions that I have for him. And we all literally just said again at the same time, we have to get this guy on. He was so gracious to come on this evening. Coach, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, well, thanks, Chris. I'm excited to be on here with you guys and dig into some training and talk some shop.
Now, we were discussing a little bit beforehand some of the just crazy wild stuff that you have at your school. So for some people who may not know, can you please just describe some of the facilities that you have up there at Homewood Flossmoor, and how far are you away from like downtown Chicago?
Yeah, we're probably about 30-35 minutes from downtown Chicago, just straight south.
Okay.
We're a public high school in Illinois, Homewood Flossmoor, Illinois, and really fortunate to be there, really lucky to be there. We have great facilities, like you're alluding to. So we have, two turfed fields. We have an indoor track. We got a hockey rink. We have turfed baseball and softball fields, full-size Olympic pool. We have two regular size weight rooms, and then we have a small weight room, dance studio, cheer studio, a bunch of auxiliary gyms, a main gym. So yeah, we're pretty lucky to with all the affordances we have for our athletes.
And then did that kind of go into your decision to take a position there, or were there kind of some other factors that just worked out really well?
Yeah, that was one decision into it, was looking at the possibilities. Like the place I was before, I didn't have an opportunity to really run our student athletes inside, other than the hallways, and or we used TrueForm treadmills to run them for their max velo sprints during the winter months. So that was one thing that did play a part. I was really fortunate to have my superintendent at my previous school get hired at Homewood Flossmoor as a superintendent, and so he invited me to apply and kind of showed me the possibilities from that standpoint. And I had already known about HF because they're in our conference one. So I've seen how good their teams have been in the past, and how great their student athletes are. They've got great coaches, especially with our track and field, both the girls and the guys side, having great coaches, and then our other sports as well. They do a really good job of making sure that they get the right people in the building to try and help our student athletes.
And I'm just blown away anytime I see video from you or one of the coaches you work with, or just kind of hearing from Ross there when he went up to a conference. And I'm incredibly excited to get to pound you with some questions here tonight. But to keep it a little light before I turn it over to Ross, you're not originally from Chicago, so let's just say you're kind of a transplant. And when family comes to visit, where's the first place you're going to go? Are you taking them deep dish or are you taking them Italian beef?
Yeah. So, I'm probably more of a fan of Italian beef. The deep secret that nobody knows about, like, isn't deep dish. It's actually thin crust. Like, Chicago is actually known for having some really good thin crust pizza.
Oh.
Yeah. So, usually we take them to get some thin crust. I'm a little bit further south of Chicago. I live in Kankakee, Illinois. So I'm about an hour from the city. But I do love deep dish. You can only do it so much, though. It's more than a meal, to say the least. But yeah, beefs are always good, and love those too. So,
all right, yeah, no, that's it's a good one to know, because yeah. I've been there a couple times, and as I was kind of sharing, hopefully the deep dish, or if not, we'll go with the thin crust on the next one. But we'll turn it over to Ross now. We'll get this thing rocking and rolling, and start to get in the weeds here, Coach. Just thanks again for coming on. We're very, very excited to pick your brain.
Awesome. Thanks.
All right, Coach. Usually what I ask guys when we get them on here is, what are the coaches that have influenced you along the way? And you don't have to be – you can be as detailed or as undetailed as you want to be, but kind of who has influenced your perspective that you got right now?
Yeah. So the people that directly affected me, you know, are my high school coaches. My football coach from high school, Craig Bundy, also ran our weight room, and then our defensive coordinator, Coach Barkley, ran our weight room when I was in high school. And so I had the opportunity after I got done playing college football and a little bit of indoor and arena two football to be a coach at the high school level. And I didn't think I was going to do that. And the head coach that just got hired at the time, Mike Cole, was just like, hey, we need a defensive line coach. Why don't you get in this? And I said, well, look, I'll do it for a semester. I wanted to go the GA route. I wanted to go the collegiate route. So I said, I'll do it. It's too late to start anything this year anyway. Fell in love with the high school kids, fell in love with just the high school atmosphere and how much influence we can have on helping them reach their goals and dreams. And so I had to stay there. And so I went back to school, got my master's in teaching, did my student teaching under Craig Bundy, who was a strength coach at the time, and my former football coach. And so I learned a lot of the basics from him in a way. And then at that time, I was just doing a lot of reading, right? So I'd read everything that Boyle put out. I told you guys, just had him on a podcast a week or two ago. And then I started to look a lot at, you know, what is it? Website with, T-Nation. That's what it is. So yeah. T-Nation, I was reading a lot of that at the time, and Simply Faster. Coach Clark out of when he was at Noblesville, got a chance to hear him speak, and Coach Gary, I'm forgetting his last name right now, but Gary, got a chance to listen to him talk down from Atlanta, and built a relationship with him. And then over the years, I got a chance to become friends and mentored by RJ up in Wayzata, Minnesota, because I did that play mentorship with him. And then in that mentorship, I got a chance to really build some good relationships with, like, Rob Brokaw, Mark Hoover, Adam Lane is another guy that's real close to me, and Doug Lee and I talk a ton. That's probably my tighter circle. And then all the guys that are in the NHSSCA from Illinois, talk to those guys a lot as well.
Okay. I didn't realize you started in football, so that's good to know.
Yeah.
So you've been at a couple really large high schools. And now that I'm in Texas, where I'm at a pretty large high school myself, and dealing with 1,000 students a week, 7th through 12th grade. And so for you, man, what are your steps when you're establishing, like, because dealing with a large high school strength department versus 200 kids is a much different thing. What are some steps when you first come in? Okay, this is what I'm going to do, and start rolling out to get your system going. Just because from listening to you talk and other things that you've written and things like that, it seems like you have a complicated system somewhat, or really there's clearly layers to it, and there's tiers to it. And that's really hard to implement on scale. So kind of how do you start rolling that system out?
Yeah. So I'll allude more into the system in a second, but yeah, it's layered. So it's a lot of simple things just stacked on top of each other. Right. So I can always peel back a layer if we're getting too far ahead of ourselves. And I tell that to my assistant strength coaches a lot, like, hey, is this too much? We need to back it off, because I want to make sure whatever we do it well. I don't want to just make sure that we're just doing things to say we're doing them, but make sure that it's making an influence and an impact on our student athletes and the teams they play for. So I really try to, when it comes to, like, trying to get all these different sports involved, is trying to show them a chance and an opportunity for ownership, and try to invite them to the party so that they have a chance to play a part in it, so that it's not my program. It's not about me. I'm just a cog in the machine. And hopefully my gear is one that helps move the needle.
Okay. That makes sense then. So when you're, cause you kind of talked about it there, how do you get your sport coaches on board when you're trying to, you know, obviously you're part of that system. What are kind of some ways that you've thought of and what you've used in the past that have worked to get them on board?
Yeah. So, most recently at HF, I did it a little bit differently. And so, what I try to do is just try to show the value and, the purpose that I can bring to their programs. And so just by having meetings with coaches and asking what their philosophy is, what are their principles that they stand behind, what's their message, so that I can make sure that I'm speaking their language. And then also asking what type of gameplay that they like to play with, right? What type of, like, are they like, mm-hmm. like our basketball team's a motion offense, okay? So they want to move up and down the court. Our football team's a no huddle team. So making sure that we're trying to train our athletes for the energy demands of not just the sport that they play, but the schemes that our coaches want to coach them in as well. And then just trying to be positive and show them the value in what we can bring to them as far as not just strength, you know, and power, but just like bringing a more holistic approach to our student athletes and into the sports that they play. So besides just having meetings with them, I'd invite them up there. A lot of times I really like it when the coaches are up there, and a lot of our coaches do a great job of wanting to come up and watch their student athletes train. And then what else I'll do is I'll send them videos of them doing things so they can put it on their social media. And then I'll also try to really build great relationships with the kids. And we do have a lot of kids, but I try to make sure that whenever I'm talking to one, I'm looking them in the eye. I'm listening to what they're saying. I'm repeating what they're saying in my own words to see that we have a connection there. So that this way they know that I got their back. And like you said, I got over 1,100 athletes that we see throughout the day or week. And so it's hard to, like, you know, make a special bond with each one. But if it's a matter of minutes or a matter of a session, make sure that athlete knows that, hey, you're in the right place. It's a place where you can get better and accomplish your goals.
That's 1,100 just at the high school?
Yeah. My
good goodness. Lord.
We have
okay.
2,800 students.
Okay. So we've got like 20, we've got like 22, and I only see like only, I see 500. So like the population of athletics is a little bit different. Okay. So, okay. Now I have more questions. What's your schedule then? Like, how often are you seeing these kids, and how is it spaced out during the day if you're trying to get through that many kids in a week?
Yeah. So we built this out when I first got there. There was only three. So we have PE 4 years. Let me start over. We have PE 4 years at Illinois. So kids take PE for 4 years. The advantage of that then is we can make strength and conditioning classes within their PE as an elective. And so before I got there, there's three sections. So three periods of strength and conditioning. Last year, my first year, we went up to 8. This year we went up to 14. Next year we're going to have over 20. And so, because we were lucky enough to have two weight rooms and our main weight room, we can fit two full classes in there. So we'll have two classes going every single period next year during the day in the one weight room, and then our secondary weight room will have one class going every single period during that time. And so, how that kind of structures out is our freshmen have to take health for a semester. So instead of having them sit in a desk and take health for the entire semester, what we did is we said, okay, you're gonna do strength and conditioning every other day. And then on the days that you don't have strength and conditioning, you're gonna do your health classes. So they do health the entire year, but they're integrated with being in alternate days with our strength and conditioning. And then sophomore year, they have to do driver's ed for a semester. So we don't get them for one semester, but the other semester they can elect to be in strength and conditioning for sophomores. And then our varsity, which is our junior and seniors, they can elect to be in it for the next 2 years. And then we still have student athletes because of their schedules, and we do have really good academics at our school too. A lot of kids take AP and IB courses, and so we offer after school training from 3:15 to 4:30, and so that's when a lot of our student athletes that can't get in during the day will come and train. And then we'll also do additional training for certain sports in their off season and or in their in season, depending on what the coach and the team wants. And that helps with the buy-in and ownership too, right? Because for example, a lot of our in season teams this spring had a lot of their athletes in during the day, so they didn't want to come and train after school, but they might have got beat up a little bit throughout the week, multiple games. And so we would do regen sessions with them, just meaning that we do some recovery sessions where it might be some mobility work, kind of depending on what the coach would tell me they needed. But it could be mobility work. It could be myofascial release. It could be some yoga and stretching. It could be some I'm trying to think what else we do with them. Oh, we do some like low day. So like low end plyometrics and some things that they might need to just kind of hone in and get a little bit better at, like ground contact times, things like that.
Wow. Okay. So then how are you the one, I know you're taking lead, but like you got multiple classes going at once and they're in separate places. Are you teaching the coaches? How is that getting distributed kind of day to day? In that process?
Yeah. So I'm fortunate because where I was before, I kind of built out our coaching staff right over time. Here I walked in and we had a lot of coaches that had played Division I or Division III athletics. And so they had experience in the weight room and or they had they're all coaches as well. So our P staff's very seasoned as far as like having having a coaching background, having a weight room background. It's just nothing was really in a full cohesion as far as like a unified approach. And so really when I came in, I just said, hey, I'll do all the programming. I'm going to get you guys on board with what we're doing. And so I spent a lot of time in there with them so that we could make sure that our coaches were ready to go. And so they knew what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And we have other things that help too, right? Like Team Builder helps us a lot because I can put all the videos on there. I have all the instructions on there. And then I'll also put all of the workouts on a Google slide for the week so that this way they can go through and see the sequence of what everyone's doing besides just looking at the Team Builder calendar.
Okay. How many PE teachers do you have for that staff?
20.
Woo.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Crazy.
I'm just like soaking this in for trying to figure out.
So I'm in charge of 20 teachers. I'm in charge of all PE.
How I can be better.
So we'll have dance class going on, regular sophomore PE, individual lifetime activities, outdoor rec. I mean, we have a really cool campus. We have a bio pond on there. So we'll have fishing and canoeing going on with outdoor ed and archery going on with individual lifetime activities, dance. We have personal fitness classes that are not sport related that are going on in the aerobic studio and things along those lines.
Okay. I love it. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit here, Coach Vogel. So I know, you know, you've got experience with VBT, you've got the pieces there. You've also got some experience with GPS, obviously, and other places. So at the high school level, what do you think in your time has been the most impactful piece of technology that you've gotten? It could be the program distribution. It could be the GPS. It could be the VBT. What do you think has had the most impact for you?
I mean, it's hard to pick one. If I had to pick one, I might say the program distribution, only because the way that I like to program things, I try to individualize as much as I can. And so it's hard to do that without it, but I have done it without it before. So I did it the first few months when I was there without it. And I did it in my last place for a few years before I started using some sort of strength software. And then I'd say that as far as like making a difference, though, as far as showing, like it's hard to like quantify like, okay, how much is that improving the student athletes, right? Because I could always write it on a whiteboard. As far as like moving the needle with student athletes, I would say laser timers might be the most important thing to have because we all know speed's the most important thing. And then after that, I started to branch into like plyomat and contact mats. And the reason why that works so well is because then you can show what they're doing at the rack with hard numbers that would transfer more to their sport, right? With simple things like jumping. And then I kind of got into like the VBT for the weight room because now you can see what qualities we're actually training. When it comes to GPS, I love GPS. The thing about GPS, when people ask me about it, it's like it needs to be a team. And so what I mean by that is like the head coach needs to be on board with what you're doing. And you need to have great compliance within your student athletes and how you've built out your logistics. Because I don't want to just collect data to collect data. If we're collecting data, we should be making decisions off of it and or reporting off of it, right? So, and when I say making decisions, it could be as simple as a conversation or it could be as simple as not making a decision because you're like, you know what, let's see how this plays out. But when it comes to things like GPS and other technologies, That's where it kind of like you need, it can't just be about you as a strength coach. I have control of what goes on in the weight room. Or at least I have a say what goes on in the weight room. And so, when you start to branch out into their practices and things, it takes a little bit of communication between both sides. And it's a learning process for both sides too, because it's a lot of work. Those first couple of years trying to hone in the data and what your coaches are expecting. Cause it's almost like some of them either embrace it and they want to make too many changes, and others are kind of reluctant to it and they think that we're trying to change them. And it's like, no, we're just giving you information to make better decisions, just like you would with stats or with huddle or film.
Yes. It's funny you say that because we just got them with football here. You know, nobody's ever used them, and it's a, you know, like you're saying, it's a matter of showing them, are we doing what we say that we're doing, right? And giving them that information and adjust. And something that's been huge, and because we started doing sprints, you know, a couple of sprints at the beginning of practice, right? Just simple stuff that a lot of people do. And, you know, the reason is that that's going to be their fastest speeds. They pretty much hit all practice.
Yeah.
And we, you know, you got the GPS on in spring football, and lo and behold, 90% of the time, that is their fastest time. You know, the fastest they're hitting the whole practice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you bring that to the coaches and it's like, okay, Ross is halfway not an idiot. And here's this thing that you can do during practice to help. Yeah. And so I'm going to pass it on to Chris here and let him
start going down a little rabbit holes. Quick if I can. So I had two soccer teams place third in the state, best in our school history. And when we were tracking their GPS data, one of the things we learned was on their game days, they would actually expend a player load during their warmups as much as one half of a game. So they're basically playing 2.5 games every time they played a game because their player load was so intense before they started their games. And so when we were looking at this and the coach and I sat down and talked about it, we knew what we wanted to get them ready for was regional sectionals and state series at the end of this year. And so we actually kind of let it go on. And then we slowly tapered that back as we got into either more important games and towards the end of the year to where we cut that down. And so it was almost like a built-in conditioning without it being so. After those 2 years, we had a couple really good – two of them are playing professional soccer right now. We knew that those teams weren't going to be as good, so we couldn't get away with that. So then we just made sure that those warm-ups were shorter in duration so that the kids could keep the intensity but not expend the energy.
That's such a great point because that's something that – myself and the football coach look at like every pregame at a football game, we're both just standing there and I'm watching the other team warm up. He's watching the other team warm up and it's like, oh, I like what they're doing. Or they came out at this time and we came out at this time and those type of duration things. And that's a huge thing we preach of, man, you don't want to kill them there in the warm up. Right. It's just about the game.
Even to that point, they're finding that in the hockey world as well. So if you're at an away game or home game or whatever, the tradition is like the morning skate. All right, like in basketball, the morning shoot around or whatever. And a lot of coaches were finding with GPS data, heart rate data, that morning skate was like playing half a game. And so they weren't just playing a game, they were playing 1.5 games. And across the month, the load they were adding on them from these kind of just like warm-ups, so to speak, were just like so many more games of load across an entire season. So a lot of teams have like kind of gone away from it. They'll let the traditionalists kind of get out there and still do their thing, but they don't push it or enforce it as much as they did. It's amazing what all this technology could do. And thanks for going into like all the details of the logistics, because oftentimes I have no idea how Ross and Blair do what they do. Like I'm in the college level and I just dictate and tell them to do whatever I want. I don't have the numbers you guys have. It's pretty incredible. But what will a day look like for you, coach? Are you more the planning logistics, or is that all that done at a certain period and like you're in the weight room a lot, calling the shots, coaching them up? Can you just go into that a little bit, please?
Yeah, it's changed because being at a new place, it changed this year and it's going to change next year too because my position's getting some different parameters, which is actually going to be better for me. So I do all the programming, all the planning. What I do is I have a lot of things planned out a year in advance, then I'll look at it the season before it starts, and then I'll look at it from week to week, and we'll make day-to-day changes based on what we're seeing with the data that we see. However, when it comes to actually coaching, I do one period during the day is all I'm allowed to do because I'm in charge of all the PE. I evaluate all 20 of those teachers multiple times throughout the year, and then I got all the normal job responsibilities, you know, like of basically like being an owner of a store, right? Like I got to do all the ordering. I got to do all the inventory, all those types of things, make sure everything's running smooth. I got to handle any parent complaints, any student issues, grading issues, things like that. So I'm up there as much as I can. However, what we're going to do next year, I'm not going to have a class during the day, so I can even be up there more. And since we have two classes up there, I can justify it pretty easily being up there with them. And so our goal is, because we'll have almost 80 kids up there at one time. We'll have two coaches, one for 36 kids, one for the other 36 kids. And then we're going to try and get an IA, which is like an instructional assistant up there as well, just to make sure that like the teachers can also teach and not just coach, right? We can help them with technique. We can help evaluate and verify their maxes, things like that. And then the IA can make sure that everything's running smooth. And then I can be up there as well so that I can help out with a coach if he falls behind, or if we have a group that has a bunch of in-season athletes, or if we have a group that has some kids that need some reconditioning, whatever, I can pull those kids out. So that's the goal for it next year. And then after school, I do all the after school training, and I, depending on the session and, depending on the time of year, I have anywhere from, two to four assistant coaches, with me, because we'll have as many as, 110 to 125 kids after school. On average, we're about, probably other than spring for our female athletes, we're about 40, and for our male athletes, we're about 75 on average.
Well, no, I appreciate you going into that detail, because there's so many coaches, like yourself included in this, where I'll sit back, I'll be like, Kyle, like, how is he doing all this? It's just like, it's absolutely incredible when you don't understand like the scale and the scope of how big your school is, how many athletes you have, and then just like your ratios of how many athletes to the student body there are and everything like that. Like it's pretty wild. I apologize ahead of time, because we're going to get really nitty gritty here on calf raises, which is going to be fun. But at a recent conference, Chris Corfist started talking about the soleus muscle, the seated calf raise that you guys have at Homewood Flossmoor. So he said something of like, they'll run in your indoor facility, they'll go upstairs to the weight room, hop on that machine, and do whatever they're kind of doing there. So could you please go into some detail there of how you're incorporating this? Is there any sort of like assessment process of like, okay, this kid's too weak, this kid's good, more reps for him, more reps for that? I know it's like super nitty gritty, but that's the stuff I love.
Yeah, absolutely. So Corfus, our sprints coach, he's awesome. He's unbelievable. Luckily to have the man, because he's incredible. He's an incredible asset for our school and for our student athletes and for myself. And so, him and Assis and Coach Beebe, our head track coach, when I first got there, was like, hey, can we get a Kaiser calf machine? I'm like, okay, well, I totally understand where it comes from. And it's a funny thing. Chris is big on the foot and the calf and soleus and that whole complex, ankle complex. And then I remember hearing Randy Huntington on a podcast talk about it as well. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of was like, not surprised that that's what he wanted, but I was like, okay, like, we have a lot of things that I'd like to get before that. But, at the same point, like you guys were talking about, like trying to show like, hey, it's not about me. It's about what our coaches want and think that they need and what they want would make their teams better. So we found one, we found a used one. We got it for a really good deal. And one of the things I was thinking about too, before I got it was, look, we do cleans, we do jumps. I'm big on doing RSI and pogos. So like, how much more do we really need out of the calf? And then when we got the Kaiser machine and we looked at their, power output, most of our athletes averaged about 600 watts, which is really low for the soleus. And so then we got them up to like the higher end of the athletes were six or seven, was like 700. We had a couple that were at 900 of some of our better sprinters. And so over the course of about 6 weeks, we got them up to about 12 to 1400. So the 900 watt kids went up to 1400. The 600 watt kids went up to 1100 was our lowest, and most of them got up to over 1200 on that. I don't think that we have gotten fully where we want to get with that. Meaning that I would like to see them get up to somewhere between 1600 watts. Talking to some people about what they've done with Kaiser and the soleus and trying to get that up a little bit more. There's also some other protocols I want to play around with it. So we'll do it bilaterally. We're pushing both feet down at the same time. We'll also do it alternatingly, so we can see like how each soleus is. And so we haven't dug too much into the asymmetries yet, but that's something that I'd like to try to dig into more next year. And then also talked about doing it not only with our shoes on, but doing it barefoot, so we can get some of the foot in there. So what I'd like to possibly do next year as well is see, okay, what's your power output with your shoes on versus with your shoes off, so we can see how much of it is energy leaking through the midfoot as opposed to the shoe or the sole helping it.
Wow. Okay, and then you mentioned that number of want to get them to about 1600 watts. Is that like, hey, you have to produce 1600 watts to run this fast? Are you doing anything with athlete size? Like, hey, my football lineman needs to be here, my wide receiver needs to be there. Is there any sort of individualization based off of any sort of factor, body weight, position, anything like that?
So I prioritize our track athletes on it first, because I know the transfer to training for them is going to be higher. And especially when you think, like you said, about offensive linemen, they're not necessarily using the soleus quite like a jumper would or a track athlete. And since we only have one of them right now and we have such large numbers, that's kind of like a specialty piece that we'll program individually for the students that need it more that way, not necessarily by position, but more by the sport or the like even our track team. We have 155 guys on our track team, so not all of our track athletes get to use it, depending on how many are in that session. You know what I mean? So we'll prioritize basically our best athletes on it first, and then if we have time to start rolling more through there, we will. The other thing with the calf complex and that is it's hard to talk about the transfer of training with it, only because you're training so many other things. I find it's hard to see if it's the calf that's doing it, because that's only one aspect of it, right? And so too, when you talk about that, are we going to look at their fly 10 time and compare it to the soleus? Are we going to look at it from their acceleration, like a 5 into 10 yard sprint? And so I feel like it kind of muddies it a little bit. One of the things I would look at after you saying that is their RSI versus that, right? Because not only do we want the power output to go up, we want to make sure that ground contact time stays low.
Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of one of the questions I thought of and wrote here as well. Are you pairing that C to calf with anything? Like, is the strength you're developing through this machine, like, have you found like, hey, it's too slow, so to speak, and to get the best transfer to acceleration, we need to do this exercise and then pair it with this. But I guess maybe not, because you're still wanting to look at that with RSI.
So with our track athletes, towards the middle to end of the season here, like we're in right now, we'll pair it with bilateral calf. We'll do Kaiser two times a week. Okay, Kaiser calf two times a week. So, and then we'll pair it now. Now we're doing it, I think, one time a week, because we're only like 2 weeks out from state. Now we're one week out from state. So, but like, let's say the middle of the season, we're doing it two times, pairing that one day bilateral with their isometrics, doing a lot of the Natera's isometrics. And then the other day where we're doing the alternating, and it makes it quicker that way, right? Because they're trying to fire one foot down and back up, and then the other one down and back up. We'll do that with like Uri's and it'd be a little bit more explosive, like pogos, things like that. Before the season started, like during indoor track, we were doing a lot of stuff with the foot complex. I can't remember the French guy's name. It starts with a T. It's long too, like Trumiello or something like that. Yeah. So it's a great article on Sportsmith. You put in like the foot complex and performance or something like that. And look at a Sportsmith, you'll find it's a great article talking about the foot complex and the way the foot hinges too. And so we were pairing the calf raises with a lot of foot exercises at that time, at the beginning of the season. As far as like our other athletes, like depending on when we have time for them, we'll just sneak them into it. You know what I mean? So I try to like pair that up with like we're not axial loading our track athletes right now, so it's easy to put it in there with what they're doing. And if we have other other student athletes, like when they come to do so if they're in the class during the day, they'll come after school possibly to do extra, like our football guys will. And so they have an alternative workout that they're doing compared to everybody else, because they've already gotten the meat and potatoes. So some of those athletes, like our wide receivers and stuff, I'll say, hey, you're hitting the calf machine today.
So with the, I'm just going to call it like success that you've seen through this machine, only having one, you have to be limited towards athletes. Like I get it. Like I have single pieces of equipment that only certain people use. Have you started to come up with creative ways if you're like, shoot, okay, this seated calf stuff is pretty legit. Let me try to, you know, rig up something over here at this rack. Let me try to do that. We're going to do spring ankle two position, and we're going to kind of go flat and come back up. Like, just kind of talk me through, have you found any success there, or incorporated that at all?
So I didn't want to go down that road only because if I remember Kaiser, because air compressed, that's isotonic, right? So because of the nature of what an isotonic machine does, I don't think there's really a way to replicate it in that kind of sense. I do think that you could take a 1080 and like, if you put like the squat plate down and rig it up where it goes up, and then maybe take a handle, like a pulley handle, and put it over the knees, you could do it that way. Cause that'd make it isotonic as well. Cause you want to be able to have it go constantly all the way through, as opposed to like a strength curve with like using a barbell and weight or some change or something like that. Would you still probably see some effect? Probably. But I think we get those from other things, right? Like doing any sort of weighted jumps, any sort of Olympic variations, and or with just body weight doing types of pogos and things along those lines. Or if you're doing any like band resisted jumps. So we don't do it that way because the calf's getting hit anyway with that. And I look at it more as it's an accessory piece that's going to help drive performance, but it's not the end all be all.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. And you may not know the answer to this one. It's just kind of popping in my head. Chris recently got a 1080 Synchro or a Quantum in his basement there. Has he found ways to kind of ghetto rig it, like as you were kind of describing there, using the isotonic setting to work the soleus some way?
Yeah, so we texted a little. We haven't talked about that. We texted back and forth a little bit about what he wants to do with it a little bit. And he got it, I think, right before track season started. So I don't know how much he's gotten to actually work with it too much. But some of our other athletes will also go over there and do some extra work with him. And so I'm sure throughout the course of this summer, before the next TFC, he's going to have some really interesting things to present about and talk about with it. Because, man, good for him for getting that thing. That's awesome.
Yeah, when he like, it's like, yeah, I won't mention the team, but like a team doesn't want it anymore. I was like, did they just switch staffs? And like the new guy came in, was like, what's this? He's like, yeah, pretty much. Wow. They were like, yeah, if you're willing to, you know, haul it away, come get it. I was like, wow, hey, I need to make those connections and kind of figure that one out.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. So on our friend Steven Thompson's podcast, Voodoo Power, which I recommend to everybody. He's a fantastic interviewer, and your episode with him was just awesome, just as a by the way. But on there, you kind of mentioned some things that you took away from Blue down with Alabama. So you kind of mentioned of like, all right, let's get him strong first, then hitting into the power, kind of something along the lines of like power is a little bit iffy there, depending on certain factors. So you could dive into that a little bit. But with the strength first idea, do you say like, okay, we got to focus on strength first? Is it only strength for you? And what I'm wondering there is, do you just focus all your workouts throughout the week on getting stronger, or do you kind of like split it of, all right, two strength workouts, one power workout? Do you vary things, or is that kind of your sole focus? So a lot in there, but what can you kind of give us some insight on?
Yeah, so it depends on where they're at within their training. Okay, so I'll try to be clear on getting through this, but not being too long with it. So we have phases of development, right? So we have our foundational piece first, right? Where they just learn movement patterns. That's our incoming freshmen, any new athletes that we first have, making sure that they can move right, make sure that they can go through all the vectors, all the different movement patterns, unloaded before we start to load, right? We don't want to load dysfunction. And so when we start with them, we'll do 1x20. We're going to cut that down a little bit this year. I feel like we went a little too long with it with our freshmen this first year. So we're going to cut that down to probably about 6 to 9 weeks at most. And then we're going to start going into what we call our strength phase. Within our strength phase, that's the primary focus is strength. Okay. But we'll do a thread of all five of the things that we work on. So It goes our movement patterns first, and then it goes strength, and then it goes power, then it goes speed, and then it goes capacity, building up a bigger engine, right? Now, within those five, like I said, we're hitting all of those at some point, either during that session or throughout the week, okay? So you could call it a concurrent model, and the fact that we are going to train them like athletes and train all those different qualities. However, that's not really the periodization model we'll use. Like, what we're going to do is we'll do Dr. Yossi's 1x20 with them first, and then we'll go into a linear periodization for the freshmen for the rest of that first semester. And maybe the second semester, depending on what we're seeing there. And then next year, we're going to start going into doing some 5-3-1 with them. And I'll talk about where the strength and the stuff comes in with that as well. or a variation of 5-3-1. I don't want to say it is 5-3-1 because I'm going to butcher it up and I'm going to probably make it my own. But then when they get to varsity, we're doing undulating with our in season and out of season, we're mm-hmm. doing more of a concurrent model depending on where they're at within their training, right? So when they're in the strength phase, strength is our focus. So they will have a heavy strength movement all 3 days of the week that they come in to train. Mm-hmm. One of the days is always a speed day. If they're coming after school, we'll do a hybrid half speed day, half strength. And the reason why I say that, we have a weird schedule. So we have a modified block. So we have 2 days a week where I see them for 35 minutes. And then the other 2 days I see them for about 65. And so I can have a longer session with them that way. Now after school, I see them from 3:15 to 4:30. So I see them for an hour and 15 minutes. So really when you add all those minutes up together, it's about the same anyway. Whether they're in season or out of season, we're always going to have some sort of max velocity 1 day a week minimum, just because I want to make sure that we're exposing to high speed sprint distance. And it also helps with injury reduction with hamstring pulls. So going back to the strength phase, right? So if they're out of season or they're a lower level athlete, they're going to do primary strength, but we'll still hit other qualities, right? Like you said, I like to do contrast training with what I do. I like to do supersets. And I like contrast training because I don't like doing something slow and then keeping it slow. I like to pair it with something that we're going to do fast or explosive. And then we'll also do Olympic lifts as well. Because I have such a large coaching staff, we have so many athletes, I've cut back a lot of our Olympic lifts. We're basically just doing clean pulls and snatch pulls. We'll do a little bit of dumbbell snatch as well. But we're not doing full snatch anymore or hang snatch like I was at my last place. And we're not doing any sort of jerks or jerk variations really either. And so then with the strength phase, if they're in season, what our power phase is, which is undulating. So they'll do one strength day a week. The second day will be, power development, meaning that we'll do something between 45 to 60% of their max. And then we'll use velocity to hone that in. And then the last day will be a game day, unless they don't have a game that week or whatever. Then instead of doing the game day workout, which is basically starting strength, it's all things below 40% of their max. And it's basically, hey, break a sweat, feel good, do a couple of high intensity things, but I don't want you to exert a lot of energy, preparing them for their game that night. Otherwise, they'll do more strength work if they're in season, they need strength. If they're out of season they don't need strength, then that's when we'll sneak in some strength speed stuff. So about 75 to 80% of their max.
If they're
in the power development group, whether they're in season or out of season, they'll go strength work on the first day, furthest away from the game. Then we'll do our power development day, and then we'll do if they're in season, game day. If they're not in season, we'll do strength speed. So when I say power development, it's speed strength. So we're doing 1.0 meters, 9.9 to 1.0 meters per second on that. And then we're starting to get some athletes that are really pushing out some pretty good power numbers. So I'm thinking next year we'll be able to start doing our speed phase. And when I say speed, we're training speed all the time. I'm talking about the time that the bar gets to peak power, okay, and gets to rate of force development. So now we're going to track how fast they can get to their peak power. And so they'll still have the same things going on, except for we're going to really hone in on that. The only thing that's going to be different about the strength day is instead of them, like, I like to do 3 week waves. So like they'll do, let's say for example, they'll do split squat heavy for that Monday for 3 weeks. Well, instead they'll do split squat for 1 day, and then that will come back up within the next 3 week cycle. So, instead of being split squat cause now we know that they're really strong. We're just going to make sure they continue to keep each one of those qualities, kind of similar to what Bobby Stroop does on his strength days. Mm-hmm. And those will rotate. They'll see that once every 21 days, that lift. So it might be split squats with a bench. It might be clean with incline. It might be some sort of squat or deadlift. Usually I'll do like a split squat with or an RDL, something like that. You know what I mean? So, and then when we get to capacity, that'd be being really individualized. Okay, what does this student athlete really need? We're talking about maybe the top 1%, somebody that's going power five, big time. What do they need to make sure that they're successful for the sport that they are, the school they're going to, and trying to get them on the field quicker for when they get there.
the fact you could remember all that and just rattle it off on a dime, the show's like, you're it. Like, you know it. Like, you're it. So one of my like big reasons for asking that question is, and like, I'll just be as honest as people want me to be. I have a 1080 sprint. I do force velocity profiling. I just steal from everybody else of, you want them around this newtons per kilogram. And so I'm getting a little messed up with, all right, they're weak in displaying horizontal force. Do I just go all in? Don't do any of this other stuff. Just go all in on just this horizontal force aspect. Then that should increase the power per kilogram. And then I just start focusing in on that speed, and that will also. So yeah, that's it's kind of my, you know, question within that question, trying to answer that for me. Who did you customize? Did you through research? Did you take from anyone your velocity and percentage ranges? Hey, I'm going to work on this quality. It's this velocity, or it's this percentage of bar weight.
Yeah. So I took a lot of the stuff I learned from Brian Mann when he like, from his first like CVAS presentation, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That guy, we all know he's like the godfather of this stuff almost. I mean, I know, we know the Russians were doing it way before that, but like the way he simply explained it, I like his bands and how they go. But I, instead, because there's like so many of them, there's like what, five or six of them. Like what I decided to do is, okay, let's find the cusp of them. So I didn't talk about this on a strength day. If they are in season, they'll be doing about 0.5 meters per second. So they're still hitting that strength, that circumax strength quality, which is about 80 to 85% of their max. However, that's also the cusp of accelerative strength as well. You know what I mean? That 0.5. And so really we're touching on both of them because we're riding that line, and they're not going to be sore because we're not really driving it. We're not really driving them into even close to failure as far as that stuff goes. So if they're doing threes on that day, 80 to 85%, they could really probably do five or six out of that. Right. So, so they're going to be fine. If they're out of season, they're going 0.3 meters per second. I prefer them not to drop below 0.3, even though I know they can, and they can grind those out, but I don't, other than an offensive lineman or a defensive tackle or like a wrestler, I don't really think it's necessary that those athletes learn how to grind some of those things out. You know what I mean? So yeah. Let's worry about the quality of the movement, and let's worry about just touching on it as opposed to living in it. Right. And then with these other bands, like you're talking about, like when I heard Dave Ballou speak and I got a chance to meet him one time and have, and like, I'm like, oh man, this is like the next step of what I wanted to do. Right. I wanted to see time to peak power. The way that he looked at power at that 1.0, 0.9 to 1.0 was really interesting to me. And then like Paul Comfort with the Olympic lifts and doing peak power at 1.65 meters per second. The thing that's interesting about when we walk, you can get peak power higher, a higher peak power output in watts, if the weight's lower, right? So if it's like 40% of your max, is actually, or 30% of your max, it's actually going to be even higher. But the reason why 1.0 is so important to me, or 1.65 in Olympic lift variation is so important to me, is that's where peak power, rate of force development, and peak force all intersect on a curve. And so now we're training, we're trying to get our most bang for our buck. All three of those hit at the same time. And that 1.0 is also the borderline of strength, speed, and speed strength. And so we're seeing both. We're basically hitting four for the price of two when we do that. Going back to your 1080 thing, I'm not trying to tell you what journey to go down, but like when I tried that a little bit, not the 1080, but like hey, let's just focus on this block. And then what happens though is these other qualities start to diminish if we're not working on them. And so I found that's why I've kind of gravitated a little bit more towards undulating, is that, hey, we're going to keep maintain these other things, but we're going to focus on this, right? And we're going to really put our time and energy in this as we still touch on these other things. And if they're good at those other things, why do we want to take that away from them either? Right. So example of what I want to do, a poor man's version of a 1080, is I want to look at instead of us running a fly, when we run our fly 10s, it's basically a 40. We got a 30 yard lead in into a full sprint. If they want to go back further, and some of our track athletes that are really fast, we'll go back further. But what I'd like to do is run a 40 and time the 10 yard increments. So have a bunch of gates every 10 yards and use Stokowski's chart that shows like the times in between each one. And then I would like to say, okay, look, if you let's say the part of the 40-yard sprint that you're the worst at is that middle acceleration, right? That 20 to 30. Then I'd like to take and see what exercises have the highest transfer of training for that part of the 40 if speed is the most important thing that they need. Mm-hmm. I've done that a little bit with jumping already. So, for example, I've taken their vertical, their RSI, and their squat max. And what I found is if, like, depending on the sport, so depending on the position and the sport for basketball with their femur lengths, somewhere between 1.5 to 1.7 times their body weight on back squat. And then their RSI trying to get that over 2.5. Talking about males, females, it's a little bit different. I can explain that too if you want me to. But getting those two numbers and seeing where they're at. So if they're above 2.5 and they're below 1.5 or 1.7 on their back squat, then we need to work on strength anyway, because that's going to drive up their RSI because they need to get stronger to get off the ground more forcefully, right? To get a higher flight time. If they are low on the ground contact time and low on the strength, I'm still going to drive strength first, because I know that that's still going to push the envelope, and they're still going to do pogos and things like that to get the ground contact time up. Now, if they, let's say their strength numbers are high enough and their RSI score is too low, then I'm going to work on more ground contact time, more explosive pogos, and I might even cut out, depending on how strength dominant that athlete is, some of the either reps or sets, depending on what we're doing at that time. And if they're good on both, then it's really hard to drive that RSI past 3.0 anyway. So we're going to probably just look at what other qualities do they need to be a better athlete, especially with basketball. Like, everybody thinks that they need to jump real high, but if the taller they are, the less they need to worry about jumping high, right? They know that, like, on average, an NBA basketball player's vertical is like 13 inches per jump. So that's really not, I don't think it's as important how high they can jump once they can dunk. I think once they can dunk, it's more important how quickly can they get off the ground or reaccelerate to get off the ground after the first jump.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Coach, can you touch on the differences between males and females with regards to the RSI?
One more time, brother.
Sorry about that. Would you elaborate on the differences between male and female in regards to RSI?
Yeah. Yeah. So with female, I look at 1.3 to 1.5 on their back squat for that. And then with their RSI, it's about 2.0 that I want to see them to 2.5, get to there. I have had girls get 3.0 and higher for their RSI, but typically they're about a half a point below what the guys are. So if I can get girls above 2.0, that's pretty good. If I get them up to 2.5, I'm really happy. If they're at 3.0, that's really elite. I've only had about, you know, maybe a half a dozen girls get there. It's special when they can get there with their RSI. And it doesn't have to be back squat. So, like, it could be their front squat. Their front squat's usually about 10 to 20% less than what their back squat is. So if I was doing females for front squat, I'd say 1.0 or better. For males for front squat, I'd say probably 1.5 or better. Or if you wanted to do trap bar deadlift, I'd say 2.0 would be my mark for guys, and probably 1.75 for females. Split squat, I'd probably go similar to what my front squat maxes would be, as far as giving an idea of relative strength, because I'm not necessarily married to, like, oh, we have to squat. You know, I find a lot of benefits in it. But if a coach was like, oh, we're not squatting, or, like, we have some kids, you know, that might have scoliosis or can't axial load or whatever the issue might be, we got to make sure that we can still help them improve without, you know, fix them into a certain position or a certain lift.
Awesome. What are you using to measure your RSIs there? Do you have the Skyhook? Is that right?
Yeah. So I got Skyhook and a plyomat.
Which one's your favorite right now?
For RSI, I like the Skyhook. For everything else, I like the plyomat. Only because I like how quick it works. I like how it displays a little bit better. I'm good friends with Rich Burnett as far as, like, I think he's a stand-up guy. I love what he does. I think the Skyhook guys are awesome too. I got a chance to meet them as well, and I think they made a really great product. They're both equally accurate. It just comes down to what you prefer. One thing I like about the plyomat is I don't have to worry as much about disconnection because I can hardwire it or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And then I also don't have to, the other thing I like about plyomat is that I can, put it in between plyo boxes when we're doing depth jumps, things like that. And, do it that way. I know Skyhook did come out with something where you can do it that way too. Now I just haven't done it yet. You can daisy. The other thing too, is I can daisy chain them together. At my last place, I had more than one plyomat. So I daisy chain them together and I only had to use one iPad. For the display, as opposed to having one iPad per mat.
Gotcha. I've got the Skyhook, and it's my second one, and I've had an interesting time with them. I like it. I love it when it works, but I've just struggled with the technology a little bit. But that's a conversation for me and Skyhook, I guess.
Does it drop out sometimes? Is that what you have happen sometimes?
Yeah, I'll have if they land near the like brain bot or whatever the, you know, battery pack is, it'll like disconnect from Bluetooth. I'll have times where, it literally just won't connect and record anything. And that's really frustrating because I'll have a team coming in. I'll have it all set up. It'll queue up. Like all of even tested it out before they come in and then we're about to roll and it doesn't work. And I'm like, I am going to snap. So
yeah,
that
the technology doesn't work. It's frustrating. Sometimes you can put like a red piece of tape,
yeah,
so the kids kind of know where their landing zone is, like inside of there. That kind of helps sometimes. But like, I know what you mean. Like, the bigger the mat, the easier. And it's funny, the kids with the highest RSIs don't usually land in the same spot all the time.
Yeah,
usually they're kind of always going a little bit forward, right? Getting that, like what you were talking about, curve with the horizontal projection.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when it works, it's phenomenal. It's a great resource. Love it. When it doesn't, truly frustrating. With that said, I would like to just bounce back a few minutes here. And you've said that you have your teams or your groups in at least three times a week. I've heard other coaches, especially high school coaches, kind of talk about how high school kids can recover so quickly. You know, has to do with hormones. Obviously their hormones are going crazy inside their body during those years. And, man, I can't think of a better drug for them to take than just being a teenager. It's the only one I would want them to take, but anyways, obviously I see my teams in the high school, like right now, max two times a week. I have a lot of off season students. I see like four times a week, which is huge. I think, what do you think is kind of optimal? I know you've got them three times. If you could get them in more, would you? I know it's hard with the setup that you have and how many students you see, but what do you think would be best?
Yeah, I think it depends again on the sport, right? So I'm like swim, I'll see them two times a week. And I think it's okay to see them two times a week because they need to be in the pool, right? Same with like, I never want to have the weight room take away from what they need for their sport, yeah, right? We're a supplement for it. So it comes down to like, how much can we get them in to help them and not necessarily hurt them? Because there's unintended consequences with everything that we do. And so like you're saying about that with like them bouncing back and things like that is, yes, there's kids that can do that and they're awesome at it. And there's also times when if they don't get any sleep, they're terrible the next day, right? Like, and so especially when you think about intent, so I think sometimes we mistake them bouncing back with where the intent is at, right? So are they putting out submaximal outputs? Are they putting out maximal outputs? And it depends on what type of training you're doing that day or what type of phase you're in or whatever you're doing. So for example, our football guys in the off season, I could see them up to seven times in a week, right? We get them four times during the school day and then three more times after school. However, I feel we get more out of that by splitting it up, having an hour and 15 minute session with a 45 minute session in one day, as opposed to a full 2 hour session, right? Because we're going to get more higher intent out of that. Now, the other thing too, with that is some of that time gets wasted, right? We got to do some instruction with it. We got to make sure that we get them warmed up and ready to go. We got to stop. And like, I do a lot of Kickstarters and things to, you know, make sure that they're having fun with what they're doing, because they are coming in seven times. And so mentally they got to be ready to do that. But from the other end, if I have them coming in like twice, for example, on a strength day, then they come in, they're doing strength at the beginning of in the PE session. They're also going to be working on strength on the second session after school. And then if they're in the power group or whatever, and they're working on speed strength, then they're going to have that full day. So we're still going to do that like low high version, or that Charlie Francis version of like, hey, this is what we're focusing on that day, and we're going to stay on that day with what it is. I'm not going to put two different things together, because then we're kind of fighting different systems, right? So, like speed days, I like to have, and I was talking to some strength coaches about this. I like my, like, if we're doing strength work, like heavy strength work with our legs, I like the speed day to be either the day before or before we start the session, ideally, right? We're going to do speed work first, and then we'll do our heavy lift. I played around a little bit. I'd have to look at my data. I don't want to quote this, but like, I wonder sometimes if I would do speed day with a speed strength day, if that's too much, because that's a lot of neuromuscular output, right? Like fast twitch firing. If I'm doing all that in one session, I don't know how much repeat effort we can get out of that. And so, I've never tried testing it and seeing like, oh, how many times can I get this kid to, you know, sprint, like, because typically when we do our max velo days, our fly 10 sprints, they're going to do two of them, and they could go up to four. Once they drop below 5% to 10% below their max V, they're cut off. They don't get a run anymore. And so same thing kind of goes with their speed strength stuff. Like when they're in the weight room, like their first set, they're going to make adjustments based on the speed of the bar for the following sets.
That makes sense. Thanks, Coach.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to hijack it here for a second, guys.
Dude, all right. Do it.
So you've touched on it a little bit, and I'm going to present to you my idea for football training this upcoming year, and I need you to tell me if I'm an idiot, Vogel, or if it's a good train of thought.
I don't know if I got the answers, my man. But
well, we're going to find out, buddy, because Texas forever when it comes to football, so we got to figure this one out together. Yeah. And so last year – you know, like most, so I see those guys two times a week, three times tops, but two times a week. And so last year we did Monday, Wednesday, basically like every other program in the country. And so something I'm looking at, and I got this from Stokowski from talking to him, because they do a very unique thing at Grayson, which is a powerhouse. Basically, they practice Monday, Tuesday, but they practice harder probably than other people do in the country. And then their Wednesday for them is basically recovery day, recovery film, walkthrough. They do a recovery lift. And then Thursday is a nice speed. And they probably, and he's saying they probably practice harder on Thursdays than other people too. But his point was that Wednesday is there to make everything right. So if you feel like the guys are struggling Tuesday, well, you got Wednesday to fix it. Like Wednesday is going to get them right, and they're going to feel good going into Thursday. So with that train of thought, I'm debating on for us to go Monday, Tuesday, and then do our game day lift Friday, which we did it a couple times last year, and it went really well. Those were the three games that we won, so that's all I'm saying. And so going – and I talked to Leo Burks about this too the other day. I'm thinking going power on Monday and strength on Tuesday, because Tuesday is going to be our hardest practice of the week. It aligns with those stressors for that day. And then Monday's kind of getting the cobwebs off. And for me personally, I would also rather hit a max velo on Tuesday than a Monday, just for me personally. And then Wednesday, going with, I want to see him for maybe 15, 20 minutes after school and just get a stretch, mobility, whatever, get him right, go get treatment. So that way Thursday, man, I didn't do anything on Wednesday that's going to get him feeling bad. And then Thursday they can fly around and move. And then obviously Friday, same sort of idea as you, some sort of speed. I'm going to have VBT coming. And so throw that on there and get a little sweat and jumping and moving. So tell me what's wrong with it and tell me that I should or should not do it, or if it's halfway decent.
Yeah. I'd say whatever you do, you want to look at your data as you go, right? Because then you'll make adjustments based on the data you see. I've done it two different ways with the speed day being on Monday or Tuesday. The outputs are a little bit higher on Tuesday, but I think it's negligible. So it just depends on what their weekends look like. And if you're playing Saturday games or Friday night games, I know in Texas, sometimes you guys even play Thursday night games. So you just want to make sure that they have the recovery, at least 48 hours to go into that speed session if you're trying to drive speed, right? So with the lifts, what I think I would do if I was in your situation is I would go our max velo sprints on Monday with our heavy lifting afterwards on that same Monday. And then we do our power output stuff on that Tuesday. But if you're but as the season goes on, I might back off on some of the heavy lifting when you get about maybe probably 1 or 2 weeks away from playoffs. And then I would go with focusing more on my power output with them. You know what I mean? I've done a lot of work with this when I was using GPS. I don't know. I should have said this. I was the first school in the country to have catapult and use GPS at the high school level back in 2015 or 16. And so I had a lot of experience and a lot of help with catapult trying to implement this. And we had really good success our first 2 years. We made it to semifinals my first year. That was the best in our school history. And then we were 10-1 our second year. And we had some really good work with that. And if I had my ideal situation with that, what I would do is similar to what you're talking about with the coaching staff is I would have Monday and Tuesday be my heaviest days. I'd have Wednesday be my lightest day. And I'm talking about GPS and what you're doing schematically. And so I would try to keep their amount of plays under 20 of actual scrimmage plays and then keep that session probably somewhere between an hour to an hour and 15 minutes tops. And then Thursday we would ramp up. And so that still might be about like a hour and 15 minute or maybe a little bit longer, but I want to see the velocities be higher, right? Because a lot of times it might just be helmets or just shells on that Thursday. So I should see basically like it ramps up, comes down, and then it starts high, comes down, and then starts to ramp up to Friday. And then Friday obviously is your game day. And then Saturday, now each state has different rules, but the student athletes that didn't hit the numbers that they need to of what the starters did, that's where I try to top them off so that they're ready in case you have any injuries, so that those athletes can still perform and do well in the case that they get the chance to play more minutes later or more plays later. Now, from the strength side of that, on Monday, I would make that our heaviest lift. Tuesday, I'd probably do our max sprints because we'll do those in practice. Like you just talked about earlier, I think before the episode, we do two sprints on the right after our dynamic warm-up. And we'd literally like shout out and use an air horn on whoever hit the top sprints that day or if they hit a new PR that day.
Uh-huh. That's good.
And then on Tuesday, at that school, I had 5 days a week. It was awesome. So Tuesday was a recovery day. Then Wednesday, we do our speed strength because it's light and fast. I say light relative, right? It's about 60% of the max. Fast and explosive, which matches up with what they're doing in practice. And then Thursday, we do another recovery day, like you're talking about, like, hey, let's make sure that anything that we need to fix, we're still fixing them and getting them right to go. Friday, they do their game day. And then we'd actually bring them in Saturday morning. And it was an hour that we'd have them. They do a quick 20-minute lift, and then we spend the next 20 to 25 minutes doing recovery. And that's also when we sneak some more neck training in. So what we do on that day is if we treated the football game like a lift where everything's pressing and pushing, right? You're pushing down. So it's quad dominant. You're pressing. So everything's chest dominant. We do everything the opposite. So we do rows. We would do RDLs. We do sometimes we do Nordics. We do a lot of glute ham, things along those lines, along with the neck. And we do chin-ups or pull-ups. This way we can kind of like reset the body. So now we have everything ready to go. In doing that, we could have high Mondays because we had them ready to go by recovering them on Saturday.
I'm going to steal some things there. I'm going to make some of our coaches listen to that one.
Yeah. Now the thing too is like, I really respect what Brad Dixon does and how he does his sprint based football model. And I think this fits in it in a different way because we're monitoring the volume throughout as opposed to just giving a day off. I have no problem. Like if we gave them like Thursday off too, I can tell you that like when I was looking at the GPS data, I myself and the kids liked the model you're talking about. And we just talked about the coaches hated having a short Wednesday because they didn't feel prepared because they didn't think they wanted everything to run smooth. They wanted Thursday to be a dress rehearsal. You know what I mean? Like, hey, we're practicing for the play, dress rehearsal, we go on to the show. Whereas the other model, I think, is more like writing, right? So, hey, we're going to mess with a couple drafts, give it to the editor, then we'll make the changes, and then we'll see it published.
Yeah, I think our coaching staff does a great job. Their Thursday, I think, is dialed in. Like, they're it's not a they actually go full pads. It's not big contact though, but I mean they're doing a legit full speed type of practice, and I like it a lot. What they do, I think they're very dialed, and I don't have any complaints about how they practice, man. And they're good about letting me do what I want to do.
Nice.
Okay, so with that, and I'm shifting gears here a little bit. I've talked to you, or I haven't talked to you. I've heard you talk about overspeed eccentrics and just how it fits and that it's super important. And that's something that Thompson has, me and him have talked back and forth about, and he's brought different ideas and he makes some great points. And if there's anything I love about that guy is he makes me question everything I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. And, he's awesome. He's great.
But vice versa, I can just throw things out there and he's going to tell me that it's good or bad. And so, or ways to change it. Mm-hmm. And so, for your athletes, is that something, I'm assuming it's probably not something you worry about, obviously, when they're younger, you know, it might be something they worry about when they're older, maybe, but when you're, let's say on your squat, are you emphasizing with your kids when you feel like they're ready for it? Hey, I want you to bring it down a little bit faster and then drive up, or how do you kind of introduce that into your system?
So with squats, for example, it naturally happens when we're doing speed strength work. Because they want to go down fast. Mm. They think that they want to go down fast and get back up quick. I have done it a lot this year with like our girls basketball team because they made it to the Elite Eight this year and they did a great job. They're undersized. And so we need to really work on impulse with them. They need to work on to be able to redirect their eccentric back to concentric. And so we've actually been focusing on that with them, so that they can get off the ground quicker, because we know they can't jump very high. But even though they can jump pretty high, a lot of them have 17, 20 inch verticals. And I'm not talking about the just jump version. I'm talking about like legit, which is pretty good for a high school athlete, a high school female athlete. But the problem is they're 5'3", 5'4". So 20 inches really ain't getting them very far, even though they're working their tails off. So if we can beat them up to the ball as quickly as possible, that's where we're hoping we see some difference there. So we will do I do emphasize like fast eccentrics, but not as much on the using the barbell. I want it to be even quicker than that, so I use it with doing drop jumps or depth drops into a broad jump, depth drops into a vertical jump, doing depth jumps going box to box, and we'll put the plyo mat in between and make sure that ground contact at the right is under 0.20 milliseconds. 0.20 to 0.25 milliseconds. What we want to see on that. Mm-hmm. So that's where we'll do those types of things. And then whenever we get to some of our advanced athletes, like you're talking about with that too, adding bands to our speed strength days will also help with that. I do think that we're missing a big thing with eccentrics, like you're talking about from a fast perspective, right? Like being able to, like eccentric rate of force development and impulse braking, those things I really believe are going to be the next thing. Once we find a better way to measure it besides a force plate for sport, we're going to see that be the big driver. I can say though, like seeing kids and stuff, like I played around a little bit with K-Box, and I think that like, it's one of those qualities you can train really quickly. You know what I mean? Like it's something that they adapt to and you see difference in very quickly. So it doesn't take a lot, and it doesn't take a lot for it to change. Kind of like I was talking about the Kaiser calf machine. But at the same point, like it can also bury a kid, right? Cause that's where all the DOMS comes, is from the eccentric portion of anything. So you just gotta make sure that you, don't overdo it.
Yeah. So if they, okay. So then you want to work on the impulse. How are you, and I'm asking this because you can't be a prophet in your own town. And that's a saying that I'm going to live by, is how do you sell that to your kids? Because typically, as you know, at the high school level, you're fighting the coach, I just want to know the one rep max, you know, I just want to know what that is, whether it's the athlete and sometimes coaches, you know, when you're getting, especially when you get into the speed strength and that ballistic stuff, and you're talking about, hey, I want you to be fast down, but then you got to explode and we're quick off the ground. And that's really what's going to make the biggest impact right now. What are you saying to your kids, you know, to get them showing that it's important? And obviously you've got the data to measure and show them, but what's also that conversation with the coaches as you're explaining that to them?
Yeah. So, the kids first, you are what you celebrate, right? So if I'm celebrating 1RMs and if I'm celebrating max strength all the time and I'm not celebrating speed equally or more, and I'm not celebrating them moving the bar fast and showing high power outputs, then that's going to be what our kids are going to gravitate more to, right? Because whether they know it or not, everybody gravitates to praise and recognition. And I'll give you an example of that is, let's say you want the kids, like you get done with the warm up, you want to run over to the TV or the board to go over the general workout, right? Well, if you three are in the group with me and I say, hey, Ross, get running. You're not running fast enough. Hustle over there. Okay. You're going to pick up the pace, but only at a pace to where I'm going to stop yelling at you. Okay.
Yeah.
Versus if I say, hey, Chris, great job running the board that away, brother. And then you're going to look around and be like, oh crap, I'm the only one not running. And you're going to pick it up and you're going to go at a faster pace than if I would get on you from a punitive standpoint or a negative reinforcement. Mm. And so that goes back to what we were just talking about with the kids and with the qualities that you're trying to train and trying to achieve is if we're celebrating those things, then that's what we're going to see them get better at. I came to a school where we were fast and I told myself we're going to double down on speed. And it's only helped us. As opposed to, I could say, hey, look, we're already fast. Let's just focus on strength, kind of like what you're talking about with the 1080 stuff. Well, here's the issue then is, by me focusing on strength and doing slow movements, is that going to take away from what they're already good at too?
Yeah.
And I didn't want to take away what we were already good at. Let me build upon and enhance the things that we're already good at. And let me, like we talked about before, let me be a gear or a cog and a supplement to those things. With that. Now with the coaches, I'll ask them, hey, does this look similar to what you see in games? Is this what you want to see? Like that's where like especially with like the change direction stuff that we do in agility work and the sprint work and acceleration work is I'll tell the coaches, hey, with this lift will help with acceleration more, right? It helps with horizontal displacement. And so that this way they can kind of see that what we're doing or vertical, right? Because a lot of the lifts are in the saddle plane. It's a vertical display. Hey, this should help with our fly 10 times, hopefully, because their max velo, because it's a little bit more vertical as far as that stuff goes. But those are the things that I'll tell the coaches and ask them. When you're talking about the impulse and measuring, something that I went to that 1080 clinic up at TC Boost up in Chicago here, and yep. It got me thinking about something really cool was, I think it was Eric Allen, I think that was his name, but he's doing change of direction. And basically what he's saying is that when you go to break, so they would do I think he said he'd do like a 6 to 7 kilogram overspeed pull on a back pedal, which is pulling pretty hard, right? For a back pedal.
Yeah.
And then when the kid put his foot in the ground based on the coach just doing a ball reaction drill, like, and then he would reaccelerate and then it would give a half that, like a 3 to 4 kilogram resistance. And so if you're bad at it, it's going to make a U. But if you're good at it, it's going to make a V. And then how can you keep making that slice of that pie smaller and smaller? And that's really when we talk about eccentrics and things like that, it's not necessarily about just the eccentric action. It's how fast can I decelerate and then reaccelerate, right? And so the better we can make that V is really what I think when we talk about impulse and braking, where that stuff comes into play. And that might be the next evolution of VBT, if you ask me, is not just looking at the concentric action anymore, but looking at the time from eccentric to concentric. And are we making that those two, that single point in that pie get smaller and smaller, so it looks more like a sliver than it does a gaping hole.
And basically that's the cover of triphasic, right? Like what Cal found in the, you know, the force plate data or whatever with his two athletes.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Well, you've given me some good thoughts on the 1080 there to kind of mess around with.
Yeah.
Like that. That's good stuff.
Well, that's what I like about the Inode is that it gives you the eccentric portion. You know, now we can argue about Bluetooth and accuracy and whatever, but the fact it gives you that eccentric and that's something that I don't know, it'd be interesting to mess with the kids in a group setting. It's obviously way harder to try to do that there, but you certainly got to mess with it. But I'd be interested in I know I'm talking about Coach Thompson a lot, me and him talked about with our rodeo, because I've got some rodeo kids, and how for them the eccentric portion is the most important thing. It's not the concentric, and it's a, and I'd never even thought about it till he said something. But we've got, I've got a girl down there that she keeps having like quad issues, and it's like, okay, might need to think about, hey, let's hammer some of this eccentric stuff in the controlling, because she's getting off a horse faster than what she can run.
Yeah.
And it's just simply braking to then control to get to where she's got to go. But okay. No, that sounds good that to me.
Sense. The other thing I love about Anode is that you can control the widgets, so you can pick what things you want your athletes to see.
Yeah. Mm. Yep. Mm. And it's got the time to peak power. And I don't know too much about that at all. That's something I need to learn more about. So, it's going to be interesting that we're going to, cause we're going to get them pretty soon.
Nice.
And the kids are not ready for me to tell them you have to go to this speed, get as heavy as you want, but go to, you know, it's this, to this speed. It's going to be probably some eye opening experiences to say the least.
Yeah. Like the thing I like about, some things I found about that. Okay, so first of all, with like peak power and like the time, is we want our offense lineman, defense lineman to hit it about 0.45 seconds. So anybody that's in a close quarters, I'd say like wrestlers, things like that, you want them to hit their time to peak power in 0.45 seconds. And then if it's a different position, like a wide receiver DB, it's about 0.90 seconds. Okay, so it's almost a full second. So they actually get a little bit more time because they're a little further away before they have to hit their peak power. With that, like you're talking about with the VBT with the kids, some things I found that are interesting is my kids that like to lift heavy and are strong hate the speed strength days because that's what they suck at, right? That's what they're weak in. Mm-hmm. And so, but once they get good at it, they get hooked on it. Like I got a couple kids right now that like all they want to do now is speed strength. I'm like, no, we got to do both, or we got to go back to this. And then the kids that are naturally that like, okay, so like the basketball kids, typically the soccer kids. Okay. If you're trying to get some more ownership of them, show them a little speed strength first. They'll see that like, oh, I'm pretty good at this, and say, hey, you want to get better at this? We need to get you stronger. Mm.
That's good.
That's a good one. Cause the part that I am, the part that I'm looking forward to it the most, number one is in season. Cause that's kind of where I'm thinking I'm going to use it the most is in season. Cause off season, let's get after it and we'll be fine. The other layer of it is when we come back to variations, you know, cause I'll rotate different squat variations and do different things is, okay, we've done the safety box squat, we've done front box squat, we've done our back box squat, whatever, we've circled back. Now it's not really a guessing. It's, hey, go to this speed and let's see where it's at now. As we circle back, not having to be as, we can be more precise of kind of where you're at versus, yeah, hey, here's percentages and let's just kind of see it and almost just retest it this week. Now we can just train to it and let's see where that is on the cutoff. And I think that's going to make it so much smoother on the competition piece. Cause that's something we've added in the past X amount of weeks. The guys have done really good. Cause the way that I set up their sheets is, let's say it's 3x5 at 80%. They're going to have 80% on their sheet. And then there's going to be there's going to be 85% and 90 on the sheet. It's not required, but it's one of those, hey, if you feel good, go to 85. If you feel even better, go to 90 or hit a PR. And as you know, some guys feel a little over adventurous when they shouldn't. And so being able to say the speeds, hey, you get to this speed, now let's go to this. That's going to be a game changer for us. And the guys being able to feel that.
Yeah. One thing I would say is feelings are fickle, right? So instead of going off a feel, cause you have the metrics to look at it. Enode actually uses AI to adjust for you, and it'll give you like what you should be doing based on the goal that you have set for yourself. But basically you're about 0.10 is about 10 pounds. So 0.05 is 5 pounds. So 0.01 is about a pound away from where you want to be. So if I want to be, for example, you said we're going after, we're getting heavy. Hey, I want you around 0.3 meters per second and you're at 0.35. You probably can add 5 more pounds.
Mm. I found that out today.
Huh?
I found that out today.
Did you?
I found that out today because I did a squat to 0.35 and I added more than I should have and I failed the next set, but I digress.
Yeah, it's tried and true. It's science, right? So you just trust the science and it'll make those predictions for you, at least pretty accurately. And then something else that I had about that was with the speeds and them learning how to adjust that way, they actually then they get a better idea of where they should be at or what they should be doing, right? Because They might, like you're saying, like you're rotating through that. They might not hit that because they didn't get sleep the last 2 days, or they didn't eat well, or or they might be feeling better than they are just because they did get more sleep and they are getting more nutrients put in their body than what they normally do. So using that to adjust that, that fluctuation of about 15 to 20% of what they really are based on their recovery habits, that's where the VBT helps as well. And then the other thing that's kind of cool is you can also do, like you're talking about, like you do velocity drops. So you can say, hey, look, you're doing, like maybe they're making adjustments based on the speed of the bar, or you're just saying, hey, you're doing this weight, but you're going to go for more reps, especially for those kids that need hypertrophy. Let's say you have five sets set there, but hey, you're going to go until there's a 20% drop or a 10% drop. And then you're going to, then, so you might get seven reps, you might get six reps. If they're out of season, I'd say 30 or 40% drop. If they're in season and they're within 1 or 2 days, I keep that between a 10 or 20% drop.
All right. Boys, I don't know if y'all got any other questions. I know we've been going for a little while here.
I'm all good. Yeah, let's wrap her up here because I don't know if our brains can handle any more. The entire time you're talking, Coach, I'm honestly just like, God bless you with all the things that you're doing and you have going on. I can't, like, I just can't fathom in your setting and getting that all done and executing when, like, you have to coordinate with so many different people, with so many athletes. Like, it's incredible. So from just a pure logistics standpoint, it is astounding what you're able to accomplish there. So we've been a fan for a while, and it's one of those, like, don't meet your heroes. Like, you crush it, man. Like, we're so grateful. Thank you for all your time and all the nitty gritty and all the detail tonight.
No, yeah, I thank you guys too. And I can't take the credit for it. I'm fortunate. I got great staff. I got great people around me. I got great structures and support with our admin and our board and our community. Our kids are really, really taking their own into it and leaving their legacy. So it isn't about me. It's really about how good they're doing with it. And so then that allows us to layer the things we want to layer on there. Allows us to individualize based on the sports that they're playing, the positions that they're at, because they take so much pride in what they're doing, and we have great coaches that are helping me with it as well. So I'm super fortunate. Thank you guys for the time.
No, thank you, and yeah, amen to all that and what you just said. Just the good people around you, the good athletes, all that, and be looking forward to me hounding you at the next Track Football Consortium out there in Chicago. Looking forward to it. Thanks again, Coach.
Thank you, Coach.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Victory Over Self Radio. Episodes are available anywhere you listen to podcasts. We also have videos and clips of each episode on our Victory Over Self Radio YouTube channel. Like and subscribe and let us know if there's any person or topic you'd like us to cover. See y'all next time.